Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
We do tend to go towards a more crypto-heavy direction on Wednesday evenings. I think because all of us are pretty deep into to that world, just sort of during the daylight hours. And so that's where we're going to go tonight, especially because it's Bitcoin's birthday. The Genesis block. The very first Bitcoin block on what is called the Bitcoin blockchain. That's the technology, the open ledger, the public ledger, distributed public ledger, decentralized public ledger that is the guts, the technological backing behind Bitcoin, which of course has become the world's most popular and successful cryptocurrency. It was the first one as well. It's an amazing story. And the folks over at Bitcoin.com, of course, have a piece about it. Headline, we've come a long way. Bitcoin Block Zero was born 9 years ago today.
Oh.
I didn't even know that. Like, I didn't find that out until last night. My roommate, Matt, he was telling me, oh, yeah, tomorrow's Bitcoin Genesis Day. I'm like, what? Oh, it's Bitcoin's birthday. I hadn't the clue. I knew about the day with the 10th. I knew it was created in 2009, but I didn't know which day it was released. And then there was the other day that everybody commemorates, which is the Bitcoin Pizza Day, and I think that's May 22nd, if I'm recalling correctly.
Somewhere around there, yeah. I go down to New York regularly to meet investors, and I also meet investors from California, and everybody's telling me, you gotta do business in New York.
That's where the money is.
It's like, there's money, but it's like, that's where the taxes, and that's where the regulations are, and that's just gonna get you into this trap, and it's like being... getting snared by the mafia.
I didn't get into cryptocurrency so that I could be regulated and taxed by the government.
Yeah.
Right. Now, so, we've gotten onto this Ripple sidetrack here. It's really bothersome how many of the libertarian cryptocurrency enthusiasts are into Ripple. You know, they just see it as this ride that they're taking, and they're going to...
I won't even trade in it.
It's almost like they feel like they're getting the best of the banks by holding on for this ride. And it's like, you guys are relying on the banks, and don't be surprised if you end up getting screwed in this deal.
And they're also promoting it to noobs.
Talking about how, like, libertarians are promoting Ripple, and now you have...
which is like a bank.
Yeah.
Bank currency.
And that's not the only thing that's going around now that is, basically bragging in libertarian space that they're... supported by Department of Homeland Security or some other nonsense, and if you're a libertarian, there's so many options out there that are built around privacy and decentralization that if you're not investing in those coins, you're either, to me, you're kind of a philosophical trader because you're financially supporting, something that's outside. And I don't care if you feel like you're getting the wool over on, you're not. Okay. You're putting money in. It's just like putting money into the banks. You're helping drive the prices up. You're helping drive up the value of that $60 billion that's not been mined so that these yahoos can go to the bank with big piles of money when this whole thing is over with. Why not support Zcash? Why not support Zencash? Why not support
Monero?
Verge? Why not support Monero? Why not, why not support, like, at least Vertcoin decentralizes mining? Now, it may be simple Bitcoin or Litecoin, but at least they want to decentralize mining. I mean, the idea is decentralization for libertarians, not
that's what we thought,
supporting the centralizers.
Right.
But if you've got people coming into crypto buying Ripple with fiat money like dollars or whatever, that's fine if it's kind of like the entry drug into crypto.
One of the currency that I have is Dogecoin, and I kind of feel, how come you kind of seem like you're just, you're not talking about it at all. You
there's
don't like Dogecoin at all.
There's a little to say. Doge has gone up in value a lot recently.
Astronomically. So has everything, though.
Yeah, everything. But and I know a few people who have had don't really pay much attention to crypto, but they wound up with a lot of Doge, a few years ago, and they come back.
Because it was
and
a joke.
It was a big joke.
It's becoming an entry level currency for people like say you're like me and you don't have. like $15,000 to buy a Bitcoin.
But you don't have to buy a whole Bitcoin.
Yeah, but there's something. There's a psychological feeling.
The Doge meme is kind of like
that comes along with owning a whole coin.
Yeah, yeah.
Or hundreds of it, mm-hmm. to the point that like some of the exchanges that I go on, they not only have BTC to whatever you're going exchanges, they now have a Doge exchange. And the Doge exchange many times now is as big, if not bigger, than the Bitcoin exchange. And like Cryptopia, the Bitcoin exchange closes at 5 o'clock. So after 5 p.m.
They close a Bitcoin exchange?
You can't exchange Bitcoin for other big currencies, but you can with Doge.
I've never heard
the Doge
of a Bitcoin
stays
exchange
open 24 hours.
And it's great for microtransactions.
Yep.
I just want to call in real quick and talk to y'all about Ripple.
Sure.
I hear you guys are on air just giving it a hard time, and I just wanted to call in, I guess, and defend it a little bit. Now, I'm not the biggest Ripple fan in the world, nor do I. I mean, I own some of it, but, I just wanted to play the other side of it.
Here. Sure, yeah, let's hear it.
Some things that you guys are missing here. I think one of the major advantages to Ripple is that it's a way for banks to transfer wealth to each other. So
that's
not only
fine.
Is it a currency, but it's also a network. And what it does is it's gonna revolutionize banking in a way because of the old Federal Reserve ACH system and mm-hmm. how slow it is to process transactions and things like this. And this is going to completely revolutionize payments.
I think that's great.
Payments cheaper.
I don't think there's anything wrong with the idea of Ripple as far as like helping banks move money around.
Absolutely.
Great. I don't want to wait 3 days or 3 business days.
I hate my bank.
Yeah.
And the time transferring money is the biggest reason I hate them. That's great.
So the question is the Federal Reserve going to allow banks to use Ripple?
Well, it doesn't matter, Ian, because what the Ripple network allows them to do is allows banks to deposit any currency in the world, whether it's euros, mm-hmm. dollars, yen, whatever, and transfer the wealth in Ripple and then cash out on the other end in their local currency instantaneously. The immorality of the whole system is the fact that the banks can borrow money from the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve can collect taxes from my child, my grandchild, my great-grandchild to repay those debts. And that mm-hmm. is immoral as hell. And when banks are starting to get involved in blockchain technology and crypto assets, it completely eliminates that. You can't borrow against future Bitcoin. It's impossible mm-hmm. the way the network is set up to print.
Well, the bankers aren't going to stop borrowing from the Federal Reserve.
This is like asking for virtuous behavior from Satan. Okay,
but that's not in his nature. It's getting away from that fiat currency, and it's a step in the right direction.
I agree with you. Look, man, I didn't say the banks shouldn't have Ripple. I never said that. I think that if the banks actually do this Ripple thing, and there's so far, from what I understand, no banks are. But if the banks are going to actually do this and it makes money transfers faster between banks, that's great. I think that's fantastic. If it makes it easier to send money, over a wire transfer because you don't have to go through the Fed wire system anymore and you can do it bank to bank directly, if you can cut out the Federal Reserve somehow, fantastic. But don't go around trying to claim this is a cryptocurrency that is in any way anything like Bitcoin or, Monero or Dash.
I talked with him the other day.
You talked with Satoshi Nakamoto?
Yeah.
How do you know it was him? Because the Satoshi, real Satoshi, would have to sign with their PGP key, right?
Well, for people that didn't know him before.
You're claiming to know Satoshi Nakamoto?
I've already told you about this.
You told me that it was a group of people.
It's a group of people, but I know who has the different people, so I know who I'm talking to.
Yeah, but how do you know? I mean, there's been people out there for a long time who've been trying to figure this out, and you're claiming that you know?
Well, I worked on BitGold, man, so I know everybody that was involved in things.
How many people are Satoshi Nakamoto?
There's at least 5, possibly 7, depending upon, Hal's dead, and of mm-hmm. course, and there's another person who joined after I left who has also passed away. But, you've got, about 5 or 6 people who are, essentially in the know.
So what you're saying is this group of people, all of them have access to the PGP key?
Only one does.
And who's that?
I can't say. I'm contractually bound against discussing this further.
I'm surprised nobody's tried to torture it out of you at this point, since the government's really, really want to know.
Well,
who Satoshi is.
They haven't shown up at my door. Not like the Secret Service did over the Kilo decision.
Yeah.
Well, they know where this door is. If they
know where you live.
Oh, hell.
You can bet that.
If you go back to the mid-19th century, just in the U.S. alone, there were 14,000 currencies.
Mm-hmm.
And basically every bank issued their own notes. Because if you didn't have gold and silver on hand, mm-hmm. because you had them, if you were operating a bank and you would lend those out to people to... for various reasons, you still had assets in terms of the mortgages, so you could issue your own bank's own notes based on the value of those mortgages. And so every bank had their own currency, and the value of that currency would vary based on reputation and distance. So a person who had, you know, notes from some Podunk bank here in New Hampshire that wanted to travel out west, and they had their local bank's notes, would have those notes would have zero value in, say, Oklahoma or Colorado or whatever. But so they would go to a large regional bank like in Boston or New York and exchange those for notes with a bank that people recognized.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would go to a larger bank out west and do the same thing. So it's a very, you know, cumbersome way of doing things, but it was really the only way. Because of the lack of, you know, credit bureaus and other ways for people to verify the veracity of banknotes, because you could, you know, you could theoretically counterfeit them.
Sure.
And a lot of that, I'm sure, happened.
Right. How do you know what one bank's note looks like
and
compared to another bank's
note? And that was
note.
Sort of a problem with the, you know, trust.
Well, you were giving some examples of some non-governmental controlled currencies like rice or dates that mm-hmm. some people had used, obviously with certain things, spoilage would be an issue there. But you, as you pointed out, rice isn't as likely
well,
to
that's,
spoil.
That's and one of the requirements is it has to be something that has a long shelf life. Like dates are a dried.
Yeah.
So they last just about forever.
And spices of all kinds.
Yep.
From pepper, frankincense,
used to be
myrrh,
big
all these
time.
Kind of things. Yeah, that was why frankincense and myrrh have their place in the Bible and so mm-hmm. forth.
They were
it's because they're valuable. They're, you know, for a very, very small amount, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so I consider myself corrected that humanity has had previous things that are considered currencies that have not been manipulated by governments and banks. But certainly in our lifetime,
well,
that hasn't been the case.
God, no.
Well, Bitcoin was created, and BitGold, its prototype, basically as an answer to problems with the early digital currencies that were mm-hmm. created by, you know, in people in the early internet. You had
like eGold,
Digicash, so forth, and
they got raided, almost all of them,
yeah.
right? Got shut down,
and even beyond the digital currencies, you had groups like NorFed who had
the Liberty Dollar,
yes,
you know, silver currency.
You know, Bernard von Nothaus, you know, he's a friend of mine, and
we've had him on the air here.
And you know, when I was blogging before I joined SL, I had broken the story of him getting raided.
What I'm seeing is that those religious scholars, quote unquote, who are somehow associated with the state, are against.
They don't
it.
Like it.
They do not like it. We actually talked about that a few weeks ago. And then most of the independent scholars that I've spoken to or that have released, you know, scholarly opinions, you know, fatwas of their own are either expressing A, that they don't know enough about it to be able to have an opinion, or B, that they don't see anything wrong with it. They treat it as a currency or as a commodity. And that, again, the jury is really out because they're not cryptographers. They don't understand the technology. They, you know, like this is not something to be throwing around fatwas about, because there's not enough that's known by the people who are making these fatwas on the issue. As far as myself, you know, because my focus has been in Islamic economics, and I've dealt with cryptocurrencies for quite a while. The only thing that I would say is if you own proof of stake coins and you establish a stake, then the airdrop payouts that come from that function in a similar way to the interest that is paid on an interest-bearing bank account. So it's
And that's forbidden, right?
Well, it's questionable enough that I personally would avoid it.
But an interest account is forbidden, right?
It is.
Okay.
There are certain ways that you can play the clam markets. Clams will drop to $8 and go up to around $11, and they'll do that fluctuation every 2 weeks. And there's a way you can play that market and make a small profit off of that if you can invest a good amount of money.
Without doing the staking thing where you just make money by having money.
Exactly. Where you can make a profit off that investment. Because it's seen as an investment. You're investing in a commodity.
And that speculation on volatility isn't seen as a form of gambling?
Depends on who you ask. That goes back
actually,
to the whole...
Actually, that would have been part two of my question. That would have been...
There's a disagreement of opinion on whether or not it's considered speculation and gambling, or if it's considered an investment.
It not all so much has, gambling, but speculation.
It specifically has to do with your intention. My intent is I use cryptocurrencies as a form of currency. You know, to me, it's money, you know, and if I'm buying money and selling, you know.
Well, here's some economists in general differentiate between gambling and investment based upon the return on risk or the average return on risk. So, for instance, you know, laws for casinos here in the U.S., even though the government doesn't hold to this standard for their own lotteries, they require that private casinos pay at least 95% of their revenues back out as basically the return on risk ratio. Mm-hmm. So you've got a 95% chance of getting back what you risk on a gambling thing.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy, so I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
I was going with Dave Juris to a Free State Project meeting, and I saw a pullover. It was like 10 degrees out that night up in the area of where the Quill is, which is a place where liberty activists go in Manchester, New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. And there was two cars with maybe six undercover cops. They're part of what they called the anti-gang unit, the ghost unit, and a detective Aaron Brown illegally removed me for recording and moved me all the way down to the end of the street with threat of arrest, and he pushed me. So I filed a complaint, and during a New England Cop Chases event in Rochester, they pulled up a warrant, and I got arrested. That was on video as well for filing a complaint on a Manchester cop. So I brought this to John Meyer, the attorney.
They accused you of filing a false complaint, correct?
Yes. Yeah. False swearing and making a false complaint on one of their own officers. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a nice intimidation tactic.
So I just wanted to update the folks that trial's on the 9th, which is next week.
So just to clarify, you had filed a complaint about this cop's behavior, about him trying to push you around as a member of the media. And they're claiming that you told a lie in that filing?
Yes.
And so you're on criminal. Is this a criminal case against you, or is this you suing them? I'm not clear on what the case is.
It's a criminal case. I actually got charged, arrested, booked.
We got pulled over after we were leaving Taco Biondo, which is a really cool little taco place. They've got like the best.
I love that place in Hillsboro.
Yeah, they got the best tacos in Hillsboro, and now they take cryptocurrency for their tacos, which is awesome. But we were leaving there, and there was an undercover police minivan in the parking lot that was scoping out the car that I was driving because it had a Shire plate on the back from the Shire Society. It had a custom plate. It's got my phone number on it instead of like some random numbers. So, you know, you don't like my driving, you can call. But they didn't like that. So they pulled us over and they like had a second cruiser pull right in. So there was the undercover one and then there was a marked cruiser that pulled in. So two cruisers, four cops, all of them like wearing body armor and hovering their hands over their
guns.
You're
an enemy of the state.
Yeah. Well, they wouldn't have necessarily
over a plate.
Known who it was. Yeah, all over a plate. And so we got that on video. I haven't released that video yet because it's going to be used in the trial, and I'm going to just put it all out there after the trial is over. So that'll be happening in the morning on that day. So it's going to be a day of trials for anybody that wants to attend it. If you're in New England, you can check out the Freekeen calendar at calendar.freekeen.com, and you'll see my trials there, and we should put yours on there as well.
There's been a massive security vulnerability found in the way that the Intel CPUs, really, these are the CPUs that are in everybody's laptop, desktop, servers, et cetera.
Everyone except those who are running AMD chips, but yes.
Well, yeah. And as funny enough, this may or may not be applicable to them. That's yet to be seen, as the details of the exploit haven't been fully released yet.
Okay.
But essentially, the attack will allow any arbitrary program that runs on your computer. So, you know, your web browser, for example, with a certain web page, to access arbitrary memory segments. And so things like Bitcoin keys could be leaked to any old program that would be running on your computer if they're loaded into main memory. So
Now, is that something that can affect people with Linux, or is it Microsoft only?
It's all operating systems running on x86 hardware.
Jeez, that's bad
news. Specifically, it's been tested against Intel. A similar attack has also been tested.
Now, just to clarify, sorry to interrupt, is this something that only Intel can do, meaning that Intel can spy on you, or is this something that some hacker can somehow take a hold of?
This would be like a malicious attack vector.
When you plug in the code to this thing, it's done with a code that only exists on the hardware wallet. I don't know the best way to explain this, but when you punch in a code on like your phone, for instance, there's a certain set of numbers, like you're on your bank's phone call-in thing, and you have to give it your PIN. Well, your PIN is always going to be the same numbers on the phone, right? Like you're going to press the same numbers in the same order. When you go on to, and I don't know if this is true of the Ledger, I bet it is, but on the Trezor, which is the one I have experience with, one of these hardware wallets, when you go to log into the wallet, it shows you a PIN pad on the hardware device, but on the computer, all you see are these nondescript buttons, and it jumbles them all around. So, like, normally on your phone pad, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 0, right? All in the same order. But on the hardware wallet, it jumbles the numbers around. So every time you log in, the PIN presses, the actual locations of the numbers are totally different.
Yeah, but that's just the user interface. Okay. The problem is, and particularly with the Trezor, there is a serious cryptographic weakness to the Trezor where if you have physical possession of the Trezor wallet and you create a short between two pins on it, you can read the file on the Trezor as plain text, and it provides you with the key, your 12 words,
really,
and your balances in the different currencies.
They haven't fixed that?
I hear that a fix has been pending. I haven't heard whether that fix has come out yet.
The documents show that Microsoft helped the NSA to circumvent its encryption to address concerns the agency would be unable to intercept web chats on the new Outlook.com portal. The agency already had pre-encryption stage access to email on Outlook.com, including Hotmail. The company worked with the FBI in the year of 2013 to allow the NSA easier access to via Prism, which is one of the programs that the NSA was running to get all kinds of data on you, to its cloud storage service SkyDrive. So the company, again, gave the NSA special access to their cloud. And then also, Microsoft worked with the FBI's data intercept unit to, quote, understand, unquote, potential issues with a feature in Outlook.com that allows users to create email aliases. In July of last year, 9 months after Microsoft bought Skype. So, again, he claimed it was in the process until 2013, but no, they had accomplished that a year prior to this news coming out. The NSA boasted that a new capability had tripled the amount of Skype video calls being collected through their Prism tool. Material collected through Prism is routinely shared with the FBI and CIA, with one NSA document describing the program as a team sport.
And not just our own intelligence services, but foreign intelligence services, particularly the British GCHQ, which yep. is similar to the NSA, and they manage MI5 and MI6.
So you had asked us about a, is it a cryptocurrency, EOS?
Yeah, that's it.
Well, I hadn't heard about it really, but Mike, you did some digging there during the break.
Yeah, I just scanned through their white paper. It's an interesting coin.
Is it a coin or a token? Because I see they've got a token on the Ethereum blockchain.
Yeah, the token was for their crowd sale to raise capital.
To make their own coin?
Yeah, and so they're developing the EOS blockchain essentially as a platform for creating distributed applications. And they're
How's that different from Ethereum? Isn't that what they do?
Similar, and but still different. And the interesting thing is they're using a delegated proof-of-stake algorithm, which it's really fast. I mean, there's a new block generated every 3 seconds.
Wow. All
so, right. And they've got an interesting way of dealing with minority blocks that informs people trying to transact whether their transaction is going to go through within like 9 seconds. So it's really got a great scalability design to it, at least. From what they're saying.
So you're saying you're interested in based on what you've seen so far.
Yeah.
Ethereum right now is the number 3 cryptocurrency if you rank by market cap. It's been very, very popular. It actually blew up at the end of 2017 with the CryptoKitties application.
It's now nearly $1,000.
It's record high.
Yeah.
Record high. So, I mean, a lot of people are putting a lot of hope behind Ethereum. You're saying this may be the killer unless the Ethereum people take the same concept and adopt it to their network, because all this stuff is usually open source.
Right.
So one group can apply a good idea from another cryptocurrency to theirs if they feel like it. So, George, have you purchased some of this EOS, or are you still in the investigation phase?
Yeah, so full disclosure, I have purchased a significant amount of EOS just because I believe in the product that they're making. Really what caught my eye initially was just the structure of their ICO.
Digital cash companies had offices, a creator, or a head, and were intimidated out of existence. Still others were litigiously hammered by government minders, dragging proponents into court and threatening their livelihoods with jail time. Hard-coded into its origin and open source, Bitcoin could be run by anyone. In fact, the more people who run the software, the better. The more nodes in existence, the less points at which the network can be shut down. And there are thousands of nodes in the Bitcoin system, so it's impossible for the governments. Even if the governments of the world worked in tandem at the same moment all across the world to try to shut this network down, it would be an impossibility because there's just so many of these nodes, and some of them can be obscured by, you know, things like VPNs and other setups to where you don't know exactly where their location is in the first place.
Well, the best that they can really do is to destroy people's trust in it by manipulations. And, you know, if they're seizing people's wallets as they come through borders, or they, you know, if they're able to seize a significant fraction of it, just as with the 51% problem with mining, if you have too many people in a single pool mining Bitcoin, they could theoretically introduce bad transactions and counterfeit transactions into it. The same thing as if the government seizes enough Bitcoin, they could then become a market maker and manipulate prices, not only to accumulate more Bitcoin, they could use it to destroy people's trust in it and to steal the wealth that they've built up in it.
Do we just have four sheriffs shot and killed in Colorado? That's what I was told. Like,
are you asking me what the news is in Colorado? Because I have no idea.
Well, you know what? I was told that. You know, I was told that there were. A couple of days ago. So, I thought maybe you knew more about it.
Google says that there's a gunman. Let's see, gunman in deadly Colorado deputy shooting, identified as Iraq War vet with a grudge against the sheriff. So one government guy killing another government guy.
That's kind of like gangbangers killing gangbangers.
So, it was just one person killed or four persons killed. But it was a white guy killing another white guy, right?
That appears to be that way. Yes, that's right.
So, you know
what does the color of who the person shot who, why does that is that relevant at all? Like, who cares?
Well,
a person shot a person.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.